Dismiss all anxiety from your mind and enter into the Call Me Catholic Show with your host, Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, we're going to try and get to it this hour. We won't get to all of it, but we'll get to some of it. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at the Call Me Catholic Show, where we celebrate, explore, and affirm our Catholic identity, so you can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. I am joined in the studio by my good and faithful engineer, Jimmy G. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey there, Peggy.
Did you notice the little scriptural reference there? Good and faithful? I'm trying to find just the perfect label for you.
I like that one. Good and faithful.
You're so much more than just an engineer.
You build me way up higher than I should be.
I couldn't do it without you. Hey, we're coming to you from the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove. So, Jimmy G., do you play cards at all?
Oh, gosh, it's been years.
Like as a kid?
I do have cards, like baseball cards.
No, I'm talking about the ones that have faces on them, like queens and kings and jacks and numbers and stuff.
Haven't in years.
No. I grew up in a card-playing family. Uh-huh. We loved cards. That was kind of our second language. We played with my grandmother when we were little, and then we grew up and played games as a family, and we still play games as a family. We play with our sons and my mom and sister, and just good, fun, kind of recreational games.
Sure.
But in the last couple of years, I decided to learn the game of bridge. Now, my parents played bridge growing up, but I always thought I was too young, not old enough to play bridge. But it turns out I am old enough. I'm old enough now.
You've reached that point?
I've reached that point. So I took some classes with some friends of mine about 3 years ago, and I just was really drawn into this game. But it is hard. I mean, there are lots of rules. There are lots of memorizations. You really have to listen and pay attention and read the cues. And it's challenging. But once you learn it, it's so exciting and challenging to play. I am a total believer now. I'm a true convert to the game of bridge. And like all true converts, I'm kind of obsessed with talking about it with anybody that'll listen to me. Hmm. And my husband's pretty sick of it all right now, to tell you the truth.
You're into it.
I'm into it. So the other day after Mass, I was talking to a woman at church, and it came up, coincidentally. And she said, oh, really? She said, I am thinking about taking some bridge classes with some friends, too. She said, do you have any advice for me? So I said, well, look, I've got to warn you. It really can seem daunting at first. You've got a lot of rules to memorize. Hmm. It's very hard to understand, at first. You've got to pay attention. It can be very, very daunting. And you've got to get obsessed with it for a while. And then once you get past that, your brain kind of settles in it, and it just becomes a way that you think. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, that sounds like how it was for me when I converted to Catholicism.
Oh,
she
wow.
said, it was very overwhelming at first. It seemed like there was so much to know and so much to understand. And she said, I got kind of obsessed with it, but now it's just a natural part of how I think. And I loved that analogy, and it was so cool. So I couldn't wait to share it with our listeners. Converts really are usually the most on-fire Catholics that we have in the church, don't you think?
No question about it.
Yeah, they've gone through this very conscious decision to know, love, and to serve the church, and it becomes their magnificent obsession, kind of like me and bridge.
Some of the most powerful testimonies I ever heard were from converts.
Yeah, I know.
Cassette tapes I listened to in the late 80s and CDs and the Scott Hahns of the world and Tim Staples and people like that.
And they just want to talk to you about it.
Right.
And it's far nobler and more rewarding than my obsession with bridge. But, you know, I thought that it would be fun then, as a result of that, to acknowledge all these converts out there with their great stories. And I like standing in the light with them. Everything is illuminated in their world, and they see things around them differently. And when I'm standing in that light with them, it helps me recognize some of the blessings and truths that, as a cradle Catholic, you know, sometimes I took for granted or overlooked.
Exactly.
So that's why today's Call Me Catholic show is dedicated to the game of bridge.
Oh,
no, just
really?
Just kidding. No, to the road to conversion. And we've got a couple of great and interesting guests who will shine their light on our dialogue this morning. Our first guest is such a dynamic Catholic guy. A lot of our listeners probably know him from his very popular daily morning show on Seize the Day on SiriusXM's Catholic channel. Or they know him from his series of great books called A Minute in the Church, and also his book, Magnetic Christianity. Or they know him from some of the parish missions he's led across the country or the speaking engagements he's had. And if they don't know him, well, I'm sorry about that. But don't worry, we're about to correct that. Gus Lloyd, welcome to the Call Me Catholic Show.
Thank you, Peggy. It's an honor to be with you. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's not hard to immediately recognize you as one of those fortunate Catholic converts or reverts, Gus, because you have that fire in your voice. You can hear it. Can you share with us a little bit of the experience, that moment when the world tilted a little bit and everything started to shift in your faith life?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've had a number of those. I think the first shift was when I was a little child and, of course, baptized into the Catholic faith. And then in my mid-teens, I had a falling away. And so there was the tilt on the other axis where, you know, I kind of went, because I grew up in church, so I went from being a very faithful, Catholic-educated kind of kid. I was a lector when I was about 10 years old. And then I hit my mid-teens in the 1970s, and everything just kind of went downhill from there. So the pendulum swung 180 degrees in the other direction, and I decided that I didn't really want to have anything at all to do with faith or Catholicism or God or any of that kind of stuff. And then when I, through a near tragedy in my life, my wife and I almost lost our first and at the time only daughter through a near drowning incident. That was what God used to really kind of hit me in the seat of my pants and let me know that he had a calling on my life. Now, it wasn't immediate, but over the course of a couple of years, I came back to faith and came back to faith in Christ in a small Protestant non-denominational context. And Peggy, I began to read the Bible and I just fell head over heels in love with Jesus. Mm. And then another watershed moment was when my wife said to me one day, you know, because my wife is a cradle Catholic as well, she said, you know, I think we need to go and check out the Catholic Church again. Now, I didn't really want to. I didn't know why, because, you know, we were having a great time. We had a great faith walk going on. So we went back and we went to Catholic Mass, and Peggy, it was like the Bible became a pop-up book. You know those pop-up books you get for your kids or your grandkids?
Three-dimensional all of a sudden.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened with the Bible. My eyes were open and my ears were open and my heart just flooded with love for this church. And I tell you, life has never been the same since.
Wow. Well, you actually went to school to learn the art and craft of evangelization. I didn't actually know there was such a school, the Catholic School of Lay Evangelization. What do they teach you there? Do you come out with a degree?
No, but kind of, you know, I mean, I guess, because it was actually about 10 days, and it was put on by a Catholic evangelist by the name of Charlie Osborne. This guy was God's cheerleader. That's what he liked to call himself.
Yay,
he
God.
He was. I mean, this guy was on fire for Jesus. So we went through a very intense period of just learning how to evangelize and learning how to be a Catholic evangelist. And, you know, the first and foremost thing about that, Peggy, is falling head over heels in love with Jesus yourself.
Mm-hmm. Magnificent obsession.
Because you can't do it what you don't have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have a real heart for converts. You actually feature a segment on your Seize the Day radio show that's called Conversion Corner. And I can tell that you really relate to the people giving their testimonies about their journey to a richer, fuller life in the faith. Do you hear a common thread in these stories, Gus?
You know, I think there are a number of different common threads. For reverts, for instance, there's always that period of time where there was a falling away from the faith. And some common threads that I found in that is a lot of people just kind of go away from the faith because of the pull of the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people are kind of hurt. Maybe they're hurt by the church. Maybe they were hurt by a priest or even by a Catholic. And others just kind of fall away like me because the call of the world is so strong and so loud. And then when we come back, really, there are so many different stories, but I think with every story, it's really all about just that love affair. You know, they hear a call from God in their heart, and they realize how much God loves them and how much God desires to have a deep and committed personal relationship with them, and then it's Katie bar the door from there.
Well, what would you say to people who are Catholic, maybe grew up Catholic, but never experienced that rebirth moment that happens in conversion? Can you impose a conversion on yourself?
No, I don't think so. I think that in stories like that too, Peggy, I find that there are some common themes. One is usually having children. You know, kids, people who grew up Catholic and then fall away from the faith, oftentimes I think you'll find that when they have a child or begin to start a family, there's this sudden realization that, oh my goodness, I've got someone else's soul in my care.
Yes.
You know, and that's huge. I mean,
that's
profound. Just a huge responsibility. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, I think, come back to the faith because of that. And others, just because, you know, Pascal called it the God-shaped hole. They realize that something is missing in their lives. And oftentimes we try to fill it up with possessions, alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever the case might be.
Pleasures.
And those things, they'll never suffice. They'll never suffice. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes I think people just realize that it's God that they missed all along, all this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like the process you talk about of falling in love, then you learn about it. So there's that attraction, and then you take the time to really learn more information and more about that person, and in our case, about God and His church. And you have a great book series, A Minute in the Church, where you have explanations for Catholics who want to know what we believe and why we believe it. And it's very concise and it's very approachable and accessible, because I think that's the next step in completing the conversion, is continuing to learn and grow in it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and that's why I did the Minute in the Church series, because I believe that there are two real kinds of knowledge when it comes to our faith, Peggy. There's head knowledge and there's heart knowledge. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they come in a different order. Sometimes we get that heart knowledge first, where we really begin to fall in love with Jesus, but we don't really know a whole lot about our faith and about the church and about the nuts and bolts. And I believe that as we find out more and we begin that learning process, I can say for sure that's what happened with me. The more I learned about our beautiful and rich, deep traditions of our Catholic faith, the more I wanted to learn and the more I fell in love with the faith. Conversely, there are some people who come into the church in a much more heady, kind of a bookish sort of manner, and they are convinced by the truths of the Catholic faith. What we have, our faith, is at its core, it's truth.
It's true.
That's what we believe.
That's absolutely right, Gus. So, friends, we're going to take a break, but Catholic radio host and author Gus Lloyd will fortunately be staying with us. And when we come back, Gus and I will talk about his recent experience on the road in Italy with his Pilgrim Fan Club. So don't go anywhere. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic Show, where we're walking down the road to conversion today. Hey, everybody, the Call Me Catholic Show is back. I am Peggy Normandin, your host, with a special guest. His name is Gus Lloyd. You know him from his Seize the Day radio show on SiriusXM's Catholic Channel. And you know his books, A Minute in the Church and Magnetic Christianity. So Gus and I have been talking about the road to conversion, yet another beautiful mystery in our great Catholic faith. So Gus, I've known a lot of comfortable practicing Catholics who sign up for a pilgrimage because they think it would be interesting or fun to see maybe Lourdes or Fatima or Mexico City or Rome. Pilgrimages, after all, are such an iconic aspect of our Catholic faith. But then in their journey, without any expectation, they go through a kind of conversion, a rebirth of their faith from the experience of visiting these deeply spiritual holy shrines or landmarks in their faith, and it surprises them. Now, you just returned from a trip to the Eternal City of Rome. You actually led this pilgrimage, didn't you, Gus?
Yes, and it was fantastic. Life-changing for so many people, Peggy.
Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, there's two really dynamic aspects of a pilgrimage. One is visiting the places, and the other is traveling with all these people that you're walking, you're eating, you're praying with them. It's really, really intimate, and it can lead to some very dramatic moments.
Yeah, I hope lifelong friendships, because isn't it really a lot like our faith? You know, I talked a little bit earlier about head knowledge and heart knowledge, and I think that those two things really come into play on a pilgrimage as well. As you said, a lot of people go on a pilgrimage, maybe if they've never been on one before, with kind of an expectation of being on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, are they surprised
exactly.
when they find out that it's so much more than that. Yeah.
Well, you had visited the Holy Land within the last year, I think. So you went as a pilgrim, and now you led pilgrims. How is that experience different?
You know, quite honestly, when you lead a pilgrimage, it's a lot more work.
Yes.
And you really get, you know, you get a lot more, I think. Well, it's like any kind of ministry. You know how they say, Peggy, that when people do ministry, and you ask them about it, they'll say, oh, I get so much more than I give.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is, when you lead a pilgrimage, you really get that same kind of sense, where you get to be a part of people's faith walk and seeing people grow in love for the Lord and in the depth of their faith, and you feel such a connectedness about that. So that really is cool. When you go on a pilgrimage, though, you really have more time, I think, for yourself and to kind of be introspective about your own faith walk and really experience some of the things in a different, maybe even a deeper kind of way. Not to say that you don't while leading a pilgrimage, but there's just a really interesting dynamic to both of those, and I love doing both.
Well, you've had your horizons really broadened, because that was your first trip to the Holy Land. Was this your first trip to Italy?
It was.
Oh, my gosh.
And on the trip, I'll tell you, I checked something off my bucket list, Peggy. Ever since I was a teenager, I have been a Shroudophile or a Shroudie.
Oh, those Shroud of Turin.
The Shroud of Turin. And on the very last day of its exposition, we got to go in and see the Shroud of Turin. And it was absolutely mind-blowing to be just feet away from what I truly believe is the burial cloth of Jesus Christ. It's just mind-blowing.
Well, and there is a lot of scientific evidence that supports that belief, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The evidence, I think the evidence is incontrovertible. But now, of course, the Vatican would never say, yes, this is the
You have to believe that, right?
Right, and they can't do that. But the Vatican has definitely said that this is a relic that is worthy of veneration, which is a pretty big statement in and of itself. But the nice thing about that is we can choose to believe it or not. And personally, I choose to believe.
Well, I remember there was an exhibition here with a replica of the Shroud of Turin, and a very learned man was talking about it at the center that he had set up. And I remember one of the points that he suggested was that this could have also possibly been the linen used at the Last Supper. Did that ever come up in any of the guide's narrations?
No. Okay. When we went for the exposition of the Shroud, it was very interesting because as we were on pilgrimage, Peggy, that you take almost a pilgrimage within a pilgrimage while you're there in Turin, going to the cathedral to see the Shroud, in that you have, it must have been at least a quarter mile or maybe even a half a mile walk under these covered walkways. So as you get closer and closer, you grow in anticipation, mm-hmm. and then you get to see just a brief movie about the Shroud before you actually go into the room where they keep the Shroud. And it's such a great buildup. And I'll tell you, I was not disappointed at all.
Hmm. Is it raised high up? I mean, how close can you get to it? It's enclosed in glass.
Well, they have three viewing platforms, the closest of which is probably, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet away from the Shroud itself. Now, the Shroud is encased in glass,
sure.
and it's backlit. The room is very dark because, you know, the natural light or any kind of light really are not good for the Shroud and its makeup. But the Shroud is backlit, and you can see very clearly, once your eyes adjust to the darkness of the room, you can see very clearly the image of what they call the man of the Shroud, what I call Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that they even found minuscule fibers that contained wildflowers or sort of thorn growth that was specifically indigenous to that area.
They found pollen. They found little granules of pollen that were indigenous not only to Jerusalem, but also to that time period around the first century. So all the signs really point to the fact that unless someone was crucified almost exactly like the biblical account of Jesus, which is highly unlikely, this is the burial cloth of Christ. It's stunning.
Well, next Holy Thursday, you're going to have a whole different appreciation for the whole experience going into the Triduum after having seen that. What were some of the other sites you guys enjoyed on this pilgrimage?
Yeah, we started off in Milan, and then we went to a couple of different places in the mountainous regions, Tuscany. We went to Siena. We saw lots and lots of relics, spent a lot of time doing some study and veneration of some of the relics of St. John Bosco. Mm. And I have to tell you, it was very, very moving as well. You know, I was a little surprised. In the Cathedral of St. John Bosco, they actually have a relic of St. John Bosco's brain. And the reason they kept that is because of the dreams of St. John Bosco. And if you study the dreams of Don Bosco, you'll find just how amazing they were. Then we made our way down to Rome. And of course, you know, it's funny, Peggy, when you go to Rome, there are so many magnificent churches and beautiful structures and the artwork. And it's like every time you turn around, there's something bigger and better and more grandiose than the last thing that you saw. It really is just awe-inspiring. And probably things like the Sistine Chapel. I mean, how can you go into the Sistine Chapel and not come away just completely awed by the magnificence? We also saw the fresco of the Last Supper by mm-hmm. Leonardo da Vinci. Another thing, they explain the things to you, and like you said a little bit earlier, when I went to the Holy Land in 2014, and now after having gone to Rome in 2015, my faith has completely changed. I see things in a whole different and a whole new light, and I can't wait to go back. I can't wait for it to grow even more.
You know, I remember the first time I arrived in Rome, and I looked around And it felt like, I hope this isn't politically incorrect, but I said, this is such a masculine city. You know, you have these giant ruins and everything is big and grand and it's very awesome. You know, you just feel like a small person in the midst of some greatness. It was very palpable to me.
It is. I agree. And, you know, the other thing about Rome, I think that struck me really was it's a very dirty city. I mean, it's a big city. It's like New York on steroids.
Teeming masses.
But once you go into these magnificent churches, and some of them are just, you know, there's hardly anybody there because there are so many magnificent churches and structures in there, and spend a little alone time. You know, I think the thing that awed me the most about our pilgrimage to Italy, Peggy, was this. As I looked at these magnificent cathedrals, like the Duomo in Milan, and the Duomo in Orvieto and Siena, and then, of course, St. Peter's Basilica and St. Mary Major, all of these amazing places, it struck me first that these are things that took centuries to build. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about literally generation after generation after generation of artisans and craftsmen. And the thing that struck me the most was these people all did this for the glory of God. Mm-hmm. And I just get goosebumps thinking about it. I felt a real connection, I think, with the heroes of our faith and our faith tradition after this last pilgrimage.
Well, and they did it for us because a lot of them never realized the completion of any of their work in their lifetime. It was for future generations like us. So they're grateful that you're appreciating that, Gus.
Hey, well, I truly am appreciating, too. I'm very appreciative.
Did you have anything go wrong on that pilgrimage? Anything go terribly, terribly wrong?
I did personally. I got very, very sick for about a day. And, I mean, I literally could not, I couldn't get out of bed in my hotel room. It was just really bad. So I think, you know, the interesting thing about that, Peggy, is, though, that pilgrimages, a pilgrimage to wherever you go, whether it's Italy or the Holy Land or Europe or wherever you may go, the pilgrimage that you're on very much mirrors our pilgrimage of life.
Yes.
In that you're going to have struggles. You're going to have challenges. Not everything is going to be hunky-dory, but you're also going to experience those amazing moments of blessing. And so that's why we as Catholics, we're called a pilgrim people, because our whole life is a pilgrimage.
It is. It's a journey, and it has its ups and its downs. It has its rest stops. It has its good meals and bad days in bed. Well, what are some of the places for your future itineraries? It sounds like you're kind of hooked on this.
You know, I am, and actually, my wife Michelle and I have kind of been discerning. We're not sure. I feel pretty confident that we're going to go back to the Holy Land and to Italy. Oh. And, you know, there are so many other places I want to see. It's funny, when you check things off your bucket list, you find that there are more things on your bucket list that you still want to get to, right?
Your world gets bigger. Your world gets bigger. Well, we'll be very excited to hear what your future destinations will be. Gus Lloyd, it's been really fun having you on the show. I'm so honored. Thank you for all you do for our church in your radio and book ministries.
You're very welcome. It's a privilege, Peggy, and God bless you too in your ministry.
Thank you. And if you haven't listened to Gus Lloyd's Seize the Day morning show on SiriusXM's Catholic channel, you are missing something. And if you don't have Sirius Radio, you can go to his website. That's GusLloyd.com and find his treasure trove of books, his 60-second reflections. You add new material every day to that site, Gus. It's such an incredible resource.
Thank you. I'm very blessed. Like you, I'm just doing my job, just doing my best every day to do what I believe God is calling me to do.
Well, thanks, Gus, and God bless you, brother, right? God bless you, brother.
God bless you, sister.
There you go. Next up on the Call Me Catholic show, we'll meet author and blogger Sarah Reinhart on our walk on the road to conversion today. So don't go anywhere. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic show on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Faustina, messenger of divine worship, comes to the Fried Theater on the Christ Cathedral campus beginning on August the 21st. This live, multimedia drama, performed by Maria Vargo and directed by Leonardo DeFilippis, is an amazing look into the spiritual life and strength of faith of St. Faustina. For tickets and more information, visit ChristCathedralCalifornia.org. That's ChristCathedralCalifornia.org.
Hello there, and welcome back to the Call Me Catholic show, where we are strolling along the road to conversion today. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, with a very talented and charming guest whose books and blogs are enthusiastically embraced by mothers of young children and other living people. Sarah Reinhart, welcome to the Call Me Catholic show.
Other living people? But I have to say, I'm going to have to get the audio from this show and, like, use that. I'm going to use that as a tagline. Like,
well, sure.
Mothers of young children and other living people.
Barely living.
Like my mom.
Barely taking a breath.
Yes.
Well,
if you're breathing, you're reading.
You're a potential reader. Sarah, you are a writer and a blogger, very prolific, and a speaker, all on Catholic issues. You are just very, very prolific for a young mother. And you have given evidence to an observation I made earlier in the show that converts have the most energy and enthusiasm of all the Catholics. So, Sarah, how did you arrive?
You.
How did you arrive at the Catholic Church?
I would disagree with you on that.
Oh, okay.
I've been very blessed by the non-converts in my own life, because I wouldn't be a convert if it wasn't for the Cradle Catholics and my husband's family.
Well, let's hear it for the Cradle Catholics. Thank you.
Yeah,
nice shout out for us.
I think I wrote a piece. It's been a couple years ago and, you know, buried somewhere, but about how, you know, there's this myth of converts being quote unquote sexier. Like everybody wants to say, oh, you're a convert. And it's like I get people lined up in front of me and they're all like, oh, you're a convert. And I'm like, yeah, but when I came in the church, me and my attitude didn't fit in the church at the same time. So only I fit. And then I walked back out and picked up my attitude.
So you had a little growth to do.
I'm a testimony to the graces of the sacraments, honestly, because without confirmation and Eucharist and baptism, I might still be that smart aleck 20-something everything. And I wish I knew everything I knew at 20. Somewhere in my mid-20s, 24-ish, 25-ish, I was fresh out of college, met my husband when we were working at a John Deere dealership together, and I joke with people, he's the first guy who looked me in the eye and listened, and listened like by looking me in the eye, which only makes sense if you've never experienced that before. And he seemed genuinely interested in me, and so we had a date arranged, and I was all gung-ho to go, what are we going to do? We're going to go hiking. And it was on a Sunday morning, and I said, okay, I'm packing a lunch. We're going to be all set to go hiking. And he goes, oh, I can't go that early. And I went, oh, come on. You know, I know you're not going to work, and but you can get up out of bed. No, I have to go to church, and then my mom makes breakfast afterwards.
Oh.
And I mean, I'm telling you, I hung up the phone, and I went, I don't know who this God person is.
I'm dating Opie.
A little background on that. I was actually raised Christian, so my beef with God was even bigger maybe than somebody who hadn't been, because I was pretty sure that Christians were all stupid. And I was also pretty sure that this guy I was dating was not stupid. So I couldn't reconcile those two things in my head. And then I kept meeting Catholics who weren't stupid. And they weren't like other Christians I had met. They weren't trying to shove it down my throat, which every other Christian I had met, now I'm not saying all non-Catholics are this way, I'm just saying the ones that I had known, were salesmen. You know, they were out to convert, and they were out to do it in a very brazen, accept Jesus right now. And I mean, I'm pretty sure I asked Jesus to be my Lord and Savior at least three times between the ages of 3 and 12. And then I gave up because I was pretty sure I was still a bad person. And there was just, you know, it didn't take. So
you didn't say please.
You know, I hate to make fun of it, because when my mom tells the story of me accepting Jesus the first time, I was this little kid and I was so enthusiastic. And now I have children and I can just think that it's just, there's a disconnect. There's a not seeing the whole picture, you know. So actually, I send my children now. I have children that are that age that I was, and I tell them, you know, like, yes, we do love Jesus. And yes, that first communion is when you take him into your heart. That's what our priest tells our children when they have their first communion. You're taking him into your heart, literally. You're eating him, and he will make it to your heart. And their eyes
get big like saucers.
It sinks in. It actually sinks in more with the adults sitting out there, and sometimes you see them kind of look at each other like, wait a minute, did he just say that?
Wait, what?
Yeah, but I mean, and I do that to the confirmation kids I teach. I mean, think about this. We are gnawing on our Savior, and they kind of gag a little, and I go, yes, please gag some more. Think about what you are doing when you hold that host, that consecrated piece of Jesus Christ in your hands. And they just look at me, and I'm like, yeah, it is a big deal.
That's good, but they're paying attention in your class, Sarah. But I want to get back to this first date. So did he get you on a hike later on in the day then?
We went on a hike, and then I learned, too, about some of his food preferences that are different than mine. It was sort of an interesting date. And we also learned that maybe hiking is the best way for us to spend time together, because I'm a conquer the hill kind of girl. So I know that shocks you, having heard me talk for 2 minutes, that I conquer the path.
And you know, he strolls.
Yes, he stops. He smells every rose. So I pretty much lapped him. But no,
he sounds
anyway,
like Prince Charming.
I did end up going to Mass. And then I found myself at Mass having these, I'm a very rational, or I like to think that I'm a very rational person. And I found myself having these experiences at Mass where I just was crying. And I'm like, oh, this myth thing is just getting to me. And finally, I
could have been the incense.
Well, I'll go to these stupid classes, fine. Because I could not back this priest into a corner. He was smarter than I was.
Uh-huh.
And my ego was like, oh no, you didn't. So I'm like, I'm fine. I'll go to the classes. This doesn't mean anything. I'll just go to the classes.
Well, were you dating your husband at this time, or had you gotten married?
Yes. I was still dating him. And he was the first man I had met that I actually thought, like, oh dear, I might have to rethink my thoughts on marriage. I was pretty sure marriage was a lost cause for the rest of the world. I mean, marriage is gone. It's outdated.
You're a character.
Well, my dad has been remarried a number of times. I lived through a number of divorces, and my parents was one. My dad and my stepmom was another. And I was just like, you know what? This institution, in quotes, isn't any good. Who mm-hmm. cares? I don't need anything to do with it. I've never met a man who's worth my time, okay? And that was my attitude about it. And I met him, and he was just very strong. And physically strong, but also very emotionally and mentally strong. Like, he just listened to me ramble on, and he laughed in the right places.
He was not put off.
Well, I asked him once after we'd been married a couple of years. I said, so what made you jump off that cliff that was marrying me? Like, what? He looked at me, and he didn't even bat an eye, and he goes, I didn't think I'd ever have very many dull moments with you.
I'm guessing he's right about that.
I don't know if he has had many dull moments, but intellectually, well, maybe not.
Sarah, so how long after you met him did you get married? And were you Catholic by the time you got married?
It was about 5 or 6 years we dated.
Oh.
And yes, he was actually my sponsor too, which I know is not, we've grown. We're enormous now. We have 300 families. So he was allowed to be my sponsor, but we were not yet even engaged. We didn't get engaged until I'd been Catholic, I want to say 2 years, maybe.
So you became Catholic during the dating process, all because of his influence. That's pretty, he must be pretty cool.
His family, too. I hear people talk about the new evangelization and about conversion and about, we have to go out and convert people. And I just laugh because I was that person that you wanted to convert, and nobody talking about it. I mean, I would have just rolled my eyes and walked away. It was the quiet witness. Mm-hmm. It was the living your life, the being in the culture but not of the culture. It wasn't anything loud. It was
He drew you to it instead of hitting you over the head with it.
He made it interesting. You know, like, I can't go on a date with you because my mom makes breakfast after we go to church. And I'm like, who says that?
I think that's adorable.
30s.
I think that's pretty adorable.
Come on. Yeah, and his mom makes the killer breakfast. So, I mean, I got roped into that pretty early, too.
You had all the fine points determined before you made the final commitment there. Yeah. So now, how old are your children right now?
My oldest is 10. I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and the youngest is just over 4 months.
Are you scared that any of them are going to be like you were during those formative years?
Absolutely terrified.
Well, let's hope they meet somebody like their dad.
The only hope I have is that my mother-in-law is praying for them because we joke that she has a red telephone. So I actually should look at her and go, you prayed for me, didn't you? It's that's your fault. It's your fault I'm Catholic.
She's got the direct line upstairs, right?
She does. We joke that she has a red telephone, and I really think she does.
Well, Sarah, you're a busy mom. But you still manage, you're an extremely prolific writer. I mean, you not only converted to the faith, but you, in your own way, you're an evangelist, too. You got to admit it. You don't want to admit it, but you are an evangelist for all your great
writers. We all are, right? We all are.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, how often do I go out in public with my 4 kids? The person who didn't open the door, who's saying it? Oh, you got your hands full. And
yeah.
Like, no.
Bye-bye.
No. No, I don't say that. I don't actually say that to them.
No.
Just
they
like,
get it.
I'm thinking it very loudly, though.
You speak with your eyes like your husband did.
Yeah.
A friend of mine shared this really cute yellow card that was put in the aisle, in the pews of this mass, this church that she was just visiting. And it was this darling note to parents of young children. And it was also a note to the other members of the parish. And it was just kind of like, give these parents a break. Will you? This is not easy, bringing all these kids into church.
Oh, that's true.
And it's this sweet, it's got little cartoon drawings. And the final thing says, the presence of children is a gift to the church, and they are a reminder
Bless
that
them.
Our parish is growing. Please welcome
Bless
our children
them.
And give a smile of encouragement to their parents. And I thought, that's a beautiful disposition for a parish to have, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Because it is all too easy to see the people turning around at you. And I know my parish well enough. I worked as the parish secretary and in the parish for 10 years, so I know people well enough to know they're turning around and looking at me because, not because they're judging me, but because they're laughing with me because my kid's wearing his underwear on his head again. Sorry, inappropriate time, you know.
I wish you were in our parish, Sarah. You sound like a whole lot of fun.
I don't know.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, our dialogue time has come to an end, and I haven't even gotten a chance to tell our readers that you have some great books and some great blogs. They can find out all about them on sarahreinhard.com or on snoringscholar.com. That's your blog site, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and there's some great books that she's written for children, about children. Nothing about the story. We got the first edition story of the husband, though, on our show, Jimmy G.
Yeah.
That's pretty
right.
Cool. Hey, so it's been a pleasure to meet you and talk with you about your faith and your work and your family. Thank you for sharing some of your precious time with us. I don't think you have a lot
of spare time.
The Call Me Catholic show is very, very grateful. And if our listeners, again, want to find out more about your books or about your many talents, they can go to sarahreinhard.com or snoringscholar.com. Enjoy the rest of the summer, Sarah. It was fun talking
with you. Thank you, Sue. Thanks.
We're going to take our last break of the show, and when we come back, we'll share another installment from our My Sainted Mother series, Stories from a Catholic Life. And today's chapter features Michael, who talks about the moment he began his journey from Unitarianism to Catholicism on this Road to Conversion episode of the Call Me Catholic Show. I'm your host, Peggy Normandin, reminding you there's more to come, so stay with us. Welcome back to the Call Me Catholic Show. I'm your host, Peggy Normandin, and we've been walking down the road to conversion today. Loved hearing our guests today. Weren't they fun? Two different guests, but both on fire.
They were fantastic. Really, really good stuff today.
Yeah, Gus Lloyd and Sarah Reinhard talking about the experience and revelations that led to their embracing or re-embracing their Catholic faith with renewed vim and vigor. It's so interesting that Catholics that have experienced those moments of conversion or reversion are usually no longer satisfied with just the traditional expressions and practices of our faith. They seem to feel impelled to do more than just the minimum. Our two guests today were really good examples of that. So you have Gus Lloyd, who turned his whole broadcast career over to evangelization, and Sarah Reinhard, a very busy mother of young kids, decided that she needed to write about her faith so that other mothers could tap into her experiences and insight. And we heard in the interview that she also teaches confirmation and some of the other sacraments in her parish. I have a friend who went through a conversion about 15 years ago, and she's kind of a mild-mannered person, but from that moment on, she went headfirst into the pro-life movement and has been a very faithful and very active, outspoken pro-life advocate as a result of her conversion. I have a cousin who married a man with no Christian background. He had a conversion experience through his medical practice as a physician, maybe 30 years ago, and since that moment, just charged into the war for social justice, on fire. And if you look at the people running homeless shelters or soup kitchens, they tend to be people who have experienced that lightning bolt when they've been knocked off their horses and kind of stunned by the light. It's not always the case, as Sarah pointed out. A lot of times the quietest faithful Catholics who have walked the walk all their life also have made huge contributions to our faith and to our community and to our world. Yeah, not everybody's faith is rocked by that kind of drama, not like Paul on the road to Damascus experienced. But we can use our convert stories for inspiration and for exploration in our own lives. Our faith is a living, breathing component of our lives, and it meets us wherever we are. Sometimes, you know, we just have to look. And if you'd like to revisit the stories of our guests that were shared today, you can find Gus Lloyd's testimonies on his website, guslloyd.com, or on his daily morning show, Seize the Day, on SiriusXM's Catholic channel. And you can learn more about Sarah Reinhard's books and blogs on her website, snoringscholar.com. And I also want to remind our listeners that you can drop us a line by writing to peggy@callmecatholic.com. But right now we're going to listen to another chapter in our My Sainted Mother series, Stories from a Catholic Life. These are recorded conversations we have with people sharing a moment, a memory, just, you know, a little slice of life from their Catholic journey. And appropriately today, we're going to hear Michael's account of the moment when he began his conversion from Unitarianism to Roman Catholicism.
So I was born and raised in a church called Iglesia Ni Cristo, which is a Filipino Tagalog for the Church of Christ. It originated in the Philippines by a founder who was formerly Roman Catholic. And the church, well, it contained anti-Catholic rhetoric and professed doctrines related to Arianism, which states that Jesus was entirely human and not divine. So I was raised to believe this my whole life.
Iglesia Ni Cristo originated in the Philippines in 1914. It proclaims itself to be the one true church and says that it is the restoration of the original church founded by Jesus, and that all other Christian churches, especially the Roman Catholic Church, are false. Iglesia Ni Cristo believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and the mediator between God the Father and humanity, but firmly denies the deity of Jesus.
I was good with that idea. I was happy in the church. I sang in the choir. I volunteered at the church secretary's office. I was very devout in what I grew up to believe. It wasn't until years later, after I came back from 2 years of combat in the Marine Corps, my grandmother was feeling ill, and she was Roman Catholic. I actually grew up with a larger extended relative family that are Roman Catholic. I never understood all of the rituals that occur. Or since I grew up believing in my church, I kind of thought what she believed was wrong. And so I prayed for her for a couple months, because she was at the point of near death. And ironically, when she did die, I had a vision that morning. I had a vision that she was waving, goodbye, and I saw like the golden gates of heaven. And it's strange, because my former religion, they didn't believe that the saints are alive or heaven is real. Oh, everyone's all asleep. It's very fundamentalist that way. Well, this got me thinking more and more about the Catholic Church, about the saints, about heaven, and it's what started me on this journey of faith that lasted 3 to 4 years. So that morning I woke up and I had that vision of my grandmother. It really was an eye-opening experience. It shook everything I knew about faith, religion, what I believed in, and made me reevaluate everything I knew, and made me explore more, you can say, Catholic ideas in Christianity. Or as anyone, like anybody who wants to seek the truth, I went to deep into, early church fathers, historical writings of the church, and I even read the Bible fully, more fully than I was reading it in context. The thing that got me really towards the Roman Catholic Church was reading about the early church fathers. And then finally, after 3 years of studying the Trinity debate, I finally, came to believe in that mystery, that, three in one person. During my faith journey, I was invited by a cousin of mine to go to a small faith formation in North Hollywood. It was a rosary group. It was me, my sister, my cousin, and we didn't know what to expect. We just knew that there was some kind of prayer group going on, and it was a Catholic prayer group. And it was an opportunity that seemed to have opened just at the right time that I was looking and searching. It was a small household, a prayer, and everyone was given a rosary. So we said small prayers for ourselves, and then a larger prayer was said during the rosary, but everything felt natural. Some, folks that are new to Catholicism, they feel a little squeamish about, venerating the saints like the Blessed Mother, or I felt it was like the most natural experience, and I felt energetic afterwards, actually. And also what was running through my mind is the things that were said were very, very biblical. The thing that was repeated many times was, of course, a very famous passage from the angel Gabriel.
Hail, full of grace, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women.
And it reminded me
that
the announcement of all salvation of mankind, and that was like a big deal. Like, if it was a big deal to all mankind that salvation would come, you know, through Mary, I wouldn't mind repeating it, because it reminds us every day that the first message of salvation was given to Mary from the angel, and that was a beautiful thing to say. So I did end up in an RCIA program. After a couple months, that I realized it's sort of like a mathematical solution, like a problem where everything has solutions. And I really loved the RCIA. I learned every question I had was answered. It wasn't like any other faith formation I had growing up, where things weren't questioned. And here, you know, things were explained with reason. I think I have my grandmother to thank for that. I mean, we believe that all the people are alive in heaven or wherever they are. They're continuously praying for us, and I believe that she has really guided me in my faith journey.
So that's a wrap, Jimmy G. Hey, listeners, before we sign off, I want to remind you that you can drop us a line at peggy@callmecatholic.com. We'd love to hear your comments or questions or suggestions for the show. We're a very open-minded bunch here on the Call Me Catholic Show, aren't we, Jimmy G?
We'd love to hear from some converts.
Yeah. Share your stories with us.
Exactly. Send us an email.
Yeah, some of those stories might have resonated with you. And most importantly, don't forget to join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.